Betty and Turk are helping me go through some papers and organizing papers, and we discovered this poem I wrote a while ago that maybe everyone has a copy or can share a song. The story behind this is you know, 21 years ago, when I was talking to my teacher, I said, you know, I'd really like to have at this point permanent temple, and kind of typical fashion, he said, well, does anybody else want this? You know, you always want your teacher to go, yeah, that's great, you know. So he said, does anybody else want it? And I said, well, you know, there are actually two guys that have been talking about it a long time. They're actually sitting here, you know, Mike Caffill, you know, and so, you know, this is a really small apartment. And Peter Hanowitz is going, if we can't make a place, I'm leaving, I'm moving back to Thailand. If we can't, you know. So they're still here. See, so based on these aspirations, so my teacher said, well, why don't you compose a poem, you see? So it was very wise, you know, if it was just me or it was just him, but then when you have the Sangha, then you have it. So I thought it'd be fun to read it out today, since I'll be talking about refuge a little bit and creating aspirations. Hope it still reads okay. Shall we read it out loud? A song for finding our true home. Namagurube, in the Dharma of the vast expanse, all wanderings are dissolved. In the Dharma of the uncontrived view, all doubts are resolved. In the Dharma of the incomparable meditation, all yogas agree on one point. In the Dharma of the vast activity, all wishes are accomplished. Dearest heart, root Father Lama, bless me with your loving kindness. Dearest loving mother of the Buddhas, bless me with spontaneous blissful wisdom. Bestow the accomplishments of body, speech, and mind. Please bless us that we may come home to ourselves. Please bless us that we may create a home for all. Please bless us that we may ripen our hidden qualities. Please bless us that we may share with others our loving kindness. Bless us that we resolve all conflict on the spot. Bless us that we may see through the tricks of self-cherishing. Bless us that we may trust each other. Bless us that we appreciate our short time here. Sarvamangalam. Sarvamangalam means may all be auspicious. Yeah, that's good. So the name that my teacher gave me, Tongyam, means equanimity. And Dorje means indestructible, like Vajra. So equanimity is like patience, is an ongoing virtue that is never quite achieved. Isn't that so? So our true home can be you know, on so many different levels, our body, our physical home, temple, our imaginative, emotional home, and, you know, finally our home, which is our pure open awareness. So in all of these cases, that's what we're taking refuge in. When we say taking refuge in Lama, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, we could say we're taking refuge in you know, these homes, our true home, like that. So it isn't like some magical place somewhere else. It's our home. That's easy, right? So maybe we can put this on the website at some point like that. I don't know how we get things on the website now, but we'll get them on. So today I, in preparation for several people taking refuge next Sunday, wanted to talk about Guru Yoga or Lama Naljar from a Bodhisattva point of view. Our true home, of course, is our innate wakefulness. Our true home is being Buddha, being awake. That's the point of doing the practice, awakening all our qualities of compassion and love and insight and wisdom and energy and so forth. So we want to be have that same realization as Shakyamuni Buddha. We cannot meet Shakyamuni Buddha in person, but we can meet our Lama in person. So in the Vajrayana tradition, sometimes we say, even before the Buddha, the Lama. Not that the Lama is greater than Shakyamuni Buddha, but now we can meet Buddha's representative in person. In our tradition, we need a human being to actually know that we as human beings are Buddhas too. We actually need to meet another human being who is generally a spokesperson for awakening. The Bodhisattva path is an interesting way to look at Guru Yoga, because sometimes people do Guru Yoga and they say, well, my Lama is wonderful, I want to do the meditations to realize and absorb the qualities of my teacher, but the rest of the Sangha members are so-so. So this is not doing Bodhisattva Guru Yoga. This is doing individual Guru Yoga. You know, like you have a one-to-one relationship with the Lama, and then the rest of the people are kind of tuned out a little bit. But in Bodhisattva Guru Yoga, the Sangha members and the Bodhisattvas are doing the activities of the Lama, doing the activities of the Buddha. And so we also see the Lama's activities in the Sangha members, in the students. That's important, you know, because otherwise Guru Yoga can become kind of a rock star or something, or charismatic yoga maybe, or can be you know, early developmental projection, big mommy, big daddy, that's going to give me everything. Okay, becomes overly focused. It's difficult practice, isn't it? It's hard enough sometimes seeing one's teacher's activities as being enlightened activities, but how about the person that doesn't, you know, say hi to you when you walk in? How about the person that doesn't fill the water bowls properly? How about the person that was kind of rude? Or how about the person that forgot your name? When you study closely with the teacher, the teacher is trying to always be skillful. So sometimes skillfully we're feeling special, you know. The teacher will say, oh, just sit down right here, you know, sitting right next to me, right? Other times, perhaps from a Vajrayana point of view, Tantric point of view, the teacher might forget your name, you know. Like, what was your name again? And we go, well, I'm me, don't you remember? I'm me. And then our self-cherishing is exposed. You know, we think, how could the Lama forget my name? I mean, I'm one of the most important students here, you know, or a major benefactor or something. So likewise, there might be people that forget our name when we walk in. Maybe we haven't been here for a year or 6 months or 2 years, and we think, I was really important, people should remember my name. And then no one remembers you were ever here. Remember, they do, you know. But as bodhisattvas here, we've been reading and discussing and practicing Lotus Sutra, right? So main part of Lotus Sutra is seeing that the Buddha teaches through the bodhisattvas. The Buddha's activities are realized through the bodhisattva activities, not just of the Buddha himself or herself, but of all the people that are willing to practice the Buddha way. There's a teacher I've met, I haven't met, but read. Sabrina's taken teachings from him, Zanzar, Jamming Kensei Rinpoche. I think Susan's used one of his books in the past, right? Why You're Not a Buddhist, you know. and he has an interesting book out that I recommend called The Guru Drinks Bourbon, talking about how to relate properly with the teacher. Also, there's an interesting video, maybe 10 years old now, The Words of My Perfect Teacher. Maybe we could show that for some Dharma movie night. What do you think? There's other books on guru yoga practice. Lama Zopa Rinpoche has a book out called The Heart of the Path. That's from more traditional side and more eastern side. Dzongkhar Khyentse Rinpoche, kind of a little bit of both. Like in the movie, sometimes he's sitting around having coffee in a cafe and is just like regular street clothes, and then his students see him a certain way, and then when he goes to Bhutan, of course, very high lama, and they come and visit him, and then he goes, now you have to treat me like a king. So he knows how to manifest in either way. And also an older book, but really good, how relating to a spiritual teacher, Alexander Berzin. It's good to do some reading, don't you think? Yeah, it's good to do that. But primarily for us taking refuge in Lama, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, the hardest thing for most people is taking refuge in the Sangha. Traditionally, the Sangha might be just monastic Sangha, or traditionally the Sangha might be just the Arya Sangha, the people that have realized emptiness, realized things, but we also take refuge, in a sense, in the path. So everyone here is practicing on the path, or you wouldn't be here. So you're our home too. You know, people that are struggling are our home too. People that are, you know, needing our help are our home too. It's not just people that are perfected. Isn't that nice? Many times when people want to take refuge, they have perfectionist attitudes. They need to be perfect before they decide to start walking the path. This isn't necessary. What is necessary is our intention to completely find our home in these completely reliable and ultimate objects of refuge. Usually ordinary people are taking refuge in ordinary things, right? Our good looks, our money, our car works, the job's okay, our relationship's okay. And when those things have difficulties because they're composites, people generally are totally freaked out. And then they might take refuge in more difficult things like drugs and alcohol and watching the news or something. No, please watch the news. But when we take refuge in ultimate refuges, you know, Lama, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, then it doesn't mean that we're not getting support from relative supports, right? We're still getting support from our family and our friends. We're still taking care of our health. We're still enjoying our chocolate, you know? But we're not indulging in activities that, or substances that are helping us to forget what our ultimate refuges are. We're not taking refuge in people or substances or activities that say, no, you know, the inner Lama isn't the true Lama, the awakened Buddha isn't the true Buddha, the truth isn't the Dharma, you know, like that. So there are many people and substances and idiotic thoughts that say, no, I'm your true refuge. The true refuge is fame, or the true refuge is money, or the true refuge is fashion, or the true refuge is whatever. It's tricky, isn't it? But it can be sorted out because we have the teachings that say, yes, there is the relative and the absolute. The absolute refuges are what we're taking refuge in when we take refuge. The precepts are our guidance to keep us going in the same way. They're like the little bumps on the freeway, when you know when you're getting out of the lane, which they've discontinued, right? They're not putting those anymore. What are they putting in instead, you know? Paint? Like little kind of,
yeah,
like digging into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, digging into it, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not like we're aiming towards the precepts. The precepts are kind of the little bumps, you know. So one teacher said, the precepts work best when we're breaking them. Because then we see, oh, okay, you know, that helps me get back on the middle. So it isn't by necessarily following the precepts perfectly that then we're going down the road. The precepts are help us, you know, so we're driving to San Francisco on the freeway, you know, we notice sometimes we get over a little bit or this way or that way and then come back to the middle. But when taking refuge, we need to notice like what things in the relative world are going to pull us away from finding our true home. Probably things that seem fairly benign, like, I don't know, laziness or something? I don't know. Like, we don't really have a precept like against laziness, right? Do we? I don't know. It's like, don't kill, don't steal, don't lie, don't sexual misconduct. Maybe it comes under intoxicants. Feels just so good to just kind of sometimes, I'll do it tomorrow, right? Like that. We're intoxicated. So, some things we can do tomorrow, but the things we're doing on the relative don't pull us away from doing our practice. So can we set it up so all our relative things are doing, brushing our teeth, to driving our car, to having our relationships, to our job, can they be supporting us for finding our true home? Can they be helping us, supporting us, and waking up? Then the absolute and relative work together. In a way, it couldn't be easier. But we're not ready to take refuge if we still are taking refuge, finding our home in substances and peoples and objects that aren't our true home. And this is where we need the discernment of a teacher. We need to check in. This is where we might be tuning out the bumps on the freeway. So when people take refuge, I ask them to continue to meet with me and check in. Are we tipping over? Are we going this way or that way? So you've hired a bodhisattva when you've taken refuge. A nudge that is interested. So I want to leave time for a few questions, comments, and complaints, and then we're going to take a break. So some people are taking refuge Sunday. Who here is taking refuge on Sunday? Yeah, good. I know, like good. Yeah. You want a little bit make the lions roar, you know, kind of like that. Yeah, like you just, okay. yeah, good. So lion's roar is like proclamation in a sense. We're willing to, we don't have to roar in the middle of a restaurant and say, I'm taking refuge. But if someone says, well, what's your practice? We're going to say, this is what I'm doing. We're leaving ourselves open for the people to say, oh, that's really great. Or, oh, you don't look like you're doing any practice. Or something like that, right? We're willing to have a target on our heart a little bit, right? Saying, here's my open heart. You can take a look. That's really refreshing. You're inviting people into your home, you see. You're showing them your home. Maybe it all makes sense, right? Does it? It's all just pretty straightforward. Pardon me?
It's simple.
It is simple, yeah. You know, it's like choose health. I mean, that's simple. In the practice here at Lion's Roar, I've wanted to make a big emphasis on people entering the Dharma properly through taking refuge and taking the precepts, so that when we start in this way, then we know what we're in for. And then when we take higher not really higher, but there are higher tantric empowerments or promises, we already have a firm foundation. Because I've seen what's happened in the past when people have taken, they've gone to ceremonies, they've gone to different teachers, and then they go, well, I don't know what I just did. Or the teacher said, well, you've taken refuge, and people don't know, well, what is that? So now you know, you're all prepared, and it's paid off. Oh, thank you, Renee, for asking the question. That's very good.
I was wondering, well, taking refuge, so what
vows do you take? 5 precepts. And the vows you're taking is, I vow to follow through, I vow to take home, head home, be home with Lama, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. No. That's easy, right? So there's inner Lama too, you know, because it isn't just the outer Lama. So the inner Lama, in a way, is our awakened individual self, we could say. So sometimes we call it the child clear light. We inherently have Buddha nature, but which we call like the mother clear light sometimes in Tantra. But the child clear light is that kind of our individual clear light, we could say. Right, our individual mirror, and those two have to see each other. So we say the mother doesn't forget the child, but the child sometimes forgets the mother. So the child has to turn to the mother and see, okay, here you are. So sometimes we say the inner lama is the inner awareness, and that's true, but it's the in a way it's the inner personal awareness. We have to recognize ourselves in the mirror. You can't just say, if you look in the mirror, you just can't say, well, there's another person in the mirror, right? When we look in the mirror, we should recognize that's me, isn't that so? If we put someone in front of a mirror and they say, well, there's another person in the mirror, we'll go, well, isn't that you? If you put a cat in front of the mirror, do they recognize? I've tried that with our cat. Do they see that there's another cat in the mirror? Or no?
They see something, but I don't know if they see
it. I don't know. They know. A kitten might.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know. I like those kind of psychic experiments. You know, what would... Okay. Do they think, you know, what are they thinking? So, the inner Buddha is like a transpersonal, you know. Our Buddha nature doesn't have any, you know, name to it, right? We don't own it. Isn't that so? You know, doesn't... We say our Buddha nature, but in a way, it's like we don't own it. It's like saying our sky, you know. But inner lama is that your inner sense of guide that has your own kind of personal stamp. So when you say, who's your lama? You say, you know, Lama Yeshe Jimpa, then you actually have somebody that really concrete. You don't just say, oh, it's, you know, Vajradhara, or oh, it's just Samantabhadra or something. That would be the Buddha nature quality. Has no, you know, particular personal name. And then Dharma is the truth. Yes. The inner lama is like our personal sanity, like that, rather than the transpersonal sanity of just Buddha nature. Like the inner lama is going to say, I need to practice today, right? That the inner lama is going to say that. It has that kind of personal quality. That's why in Tantra system we need a personal connection with a teacher. We need a personal connection with a Buddha figure. We call Yidam, you know, a personal commitment like that. Because we need that kind of enlightened eye that says, I need to practice, or I need to do this. Otherwise, you just have the regular egotistic eye, or you just have the transpersonal you know, Buddha quality, and then they don't connect, you see. And then people think, oh, the way to realize a Buddha nature is just get rid of this individual self. But this is an enlightened individual self. That's the inner lama. This is an important teaching, okay? Get this. Otherwise, you're always trying to get rid of your ego, and then you'd have this blank, you'd kind of just have Buddha nature, but then the Buddha nature is not going to say, you know, I need to practice right now, or I need a glass of water before I practice. Your inner lama is going to see that.
So
there is such a thing. I'm the outer lama.
Well, also
yeah, Dalai Lama's outer lama. So that's kind of inner lama in the sense that that is an archetypal figure, a Sambhogakaya, you know. Outer lama, Nirmanakaya, that's me. Then the true seeker lama is the Dharmakaya, completely open awareness, right? And then the combination, Svabhavakakaya, is like the ultra secret or something like that. Yeah. But we need a self that says I need to practice right now, or that's not a good idea to do that action, and that's going to be the inner lama. It has a personal quality to it. Yeah. Yes, sir. Yes, yes. Yeah.
All these years, I wonder who I was.
Yeah, that's our inner lama. Yeah. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Andrew, of course. Each kaya has each kind of aspect, each body has its own style of meditation, in a sense. So that the inner lama, in that sense, is learning the world of prajna, discriminating wisdom. You know, I need to do this. I don't need to do that. You know, it's beginning. You know, there's a little bit of a boundary in prajna. Sense of discrimination, you know, like that. So we understand the relative nature of self completely. You know, we see how that it's a relative shifting boundary instead of an absolute solid thing, and that's the inner lama. You know, the kind of bigger terms, so to speak, like you know, Rigpa and Yeshe are more like just the nature of space, you know, really, really huge. So the complete, in a sense, the complete non-discrimination world, but they still have the operating principle of prajna too. So inner lama's going to make decisions like that. This is beneficial to do. This is maybe time to hold back. Also connected with Yeshe and you know, Rigpa, so forth. We need that, you know, we need that kind of discriminating awareness, right? It's kind of gotten heavy, hasn't it? No, this is easy. This is easy stuff. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, because yeah, I don't know, you know, some prayers change and we omit prayers and sometimes they like that. The Vajrayana, their Tantra Guru Yoga prayers, Lamas the Dharma, Lamas the Buddha, Lamas the Sangha also. So Lamas the embodiment also, you know, the Yidam and the Dharmapalas and the Dakini, the three roots, you know. So everything gets pulled in, so it's like Tantra style is like we say if you pull one corner, the rest of it comes, right? Like I'm pulling one corner there, and the whole thing comes. Can you see that? I tell you right now, if you get this, you've gotten a lot. this seems simple. If you just, all you need to know is like, if you just pull one corner, the whole thing comes along. Most people think, well, I pull one corner, the rest just stays there, right? I know that's the way most of you think. But at Tantra, it's like unbelievable. It's like the first joy, the first boom, you're like, oh my gosh, I just pull one corner and the rest of it comes. Okay? So a huge rug, you can't pick it up by the center, right? You have to pull it from the corner. If you get the significance of that, you're going to get a lot. If you get the significance, you don't pick up a rug from the center, you pull it from the edge, and the whole of it comes, then you are getting a lot, ladies and gentlemen. I know some of this, like, what the hell is he talking about, rugs? But if you've done some practice, you know what I'm talking about. If you pull that corner and you don't let go, the whole of Dharma and the whole of the universe will come with you. It's amazing. It's unbelievable. You go, really? I don't have to surround it. I don't have to conquer that territory. I don't have to like have a bigger hand. I don't have to create a bigger hand. I don't have to be some big famous perfect person and then I'll get it. No. You just start, even a mouse starts pulling from the corner, right? Then it's unbelievable. So that's kind of like taking refuge. We get this, the corner, and there's a very famous story about the Emperor Ashoka, who's one of the major benefactors of Buddha Dharma, and he donated huge temples and money and everything else like that at some donation ceremony. And then there was one householder that donated some cranberries. And the head of the monastery put the cranberries first and Ashoka's second. That's pulling the edge of the rug, right? My old teacher, he used to say, how much percentage should you give? How much should you give in the practice? How much, And I'd go, 110%, like football style, right? And he'd go, no. And I'd go, okay, 100%. And he'd go, and I'd go, okay, 50%. And he was exasperated, start walking away. And I go, what? And he go, just start with 5%. Just start pulling the rug. Okay. That was 18 minutes. Everyone can do 18 minutes here, right? You could do it at home too, actually. Since distractions are ultimately in your own mind, So the Buddha had this revolutionary insight that it wasn't duality. It's not, reality isn't this duality, and it's not oneness either. It's this interdependence. So it's not two, it's not one. It's the interdependent world. And to practice that, we have to hold the two polarities of the duality together and see them at the same time. That's the hard part about the practice, because human beings either try to separate the dualistic state, banish it, or banish one of them, or they try to, have one win over the other. It's like either try to separate the hands too much, or they want one hand to be on the top, or they want to fight like this, or they see, okay, we'll just become one and become enmeshed, right? But the Buddha's realization is this. That's why we offer kata. It's kind of like two hands, like, because there's energy generated in the in between. When the two hands are held evenly, samsara, nirvana, you know, right, left, up, down, they're held there evenly. There's an energy arc that's created in the middle, and this dynamic happens like this. You know, we call it sometimes bodhicitta, you know. This energy forms from the balance of the polarities. So that's why when we're taking refuge, you know, we use the precepts in a way as our, you know, kind of each side of the road, you know. We hold the two boundaries there, and then we drive down the middle. Usually most systems, the differences are banished, far apart, alienated, or they're fighting, or they're one on top of the other, right? Or they're glopped together. The Buddha said the highest teachings he got, you know, from Lara Kalama and his other teachers were really merging these deep samadhi states. And the Buddha said, you know, those deep samadhi states, neither perception nor non-perception, you know, these very deep states, those are not enlightenment. He said, this is still not the final. Until he, you know, he saw, oh, you just see that they're naturally interdependent. And the dynamism of that interdependence, you know, we can ride forever. That's the continuity of awareness, and we call that tantra. So we need to hold those two together, and at first it's very difficult. I call it holding the lotus to the rock, right? That's our beginning shamatha practice, where we say, I'm willing to just sit paying attention to my idiocy. Paying attention and being present with my stillness and the movement at the same time, right? You're putting those two together, isn't that so? Distraction. This movement and stillness goes all the way through to the profound realizations of Mahamudra and Dzogchen, ladies and gentlemen, you know? So that's why I say, if you just start pulling the corner of the rug, the whole rug will come along. That's nice. Thank you, Patty, for writing this down. You know, this is a very clear presentation of how we actually work with the real path. I know you guys, you know, usually the lamas aren't going to put it together in this kind of like, you know, just capsule form so you can take it. You know, this is the real way to use the energy of duality. That's the genius of Tantra and the Vajrayana, is we don't try to abandon the dualistic world. We use it like a magnets. So in my office in Middleway House, I have these really strong magnets, and sometimes I tell people, you know, instead of having them merge and click together, you know, flip them, you know, so they're opposite like that, and then try to hold them together. You'll feel the energy, right? So that's the incredible power of our practice. But it just starts, you can just pull a little bit the edge of the rug, just hold together two little things. You know, one little insight and one little idiocy, just hold them together. Doesn't have to be big. One little samsara, one little nirvana, and then be in the middle. So a great Dzogchen, probably next to Dujin Rinpoche, you know, His Holiness Dingo Kenzi Rinpoche, talking on Mahaati, said, we don't focus in or out. We're Dzogchen, right in the middle. Mahaati's right in the middle. Present, right in the middle. Yeah, easy. Don't go in and don't go out. There's no in and out, really. Just, okay. Let's finish with prayers. One question, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're talking about with that compassion?
If you hold the opposites together with equanimity, just actually put them together like this. That's why, like, Shariputra was this wonderful yogi and Brahmin, very, a little bit arrogant, you know. Brahmins always get a little bit bad name in Buddhist. So he wouldn't even go hear the Buddha's talks, right? I've told this story many times, but, you know, so, you know, you kind of go, it's like everyone here, I'm sure, like, well, maybe I'll go, nah, I won't go, you know. So, but one time he went, he was a little late, of course, and someone coming out of the talk, and Shariputta said, you know, sorry I'm late, but what did the Buddha say? And this was a total newcomer. You should know this story. A total newcomer said, I don't know, this is my first time, but the Buddha said something like, everything that arises also disappears, and Shariputta is enlightened on the spot. He put those two together, cause and effect, just same. Just saw it right, you know, like that. Usually we're always separating, cause, separate effect. You know, samsara, separate, nirvana, separate, you know, just right together, like that. Right there. And I mean, just, that's unbelievable, right? But we all will have that realization of just hold those two together at the same time in the same place. You know, just, I just say, look between. You know, hold your hand like this and look between, right? Create a boundary here, ground boundary here, and then look between it. And then just grab hold of it. Just grab hold of one piece of thread, right? That's why we say one-pointed. We don't say one-pointed because you're drilling down. It means like a thread, like a, you know, needle. Can't sew it too. Yeah. Okay, let's do person.